to the Authentically American Podcast, featuring inspiring stories from great Americans who are making a difference. Your host is West Point grad, former Army Ranger, and founder of Authentically American, Dean Wegner.
Welcome to the Authentically American Podcast, featuring the inspiring stories of great Americans who are making a difference. I'm your host, Dean Wegner, and I'm here today with my new friend and special guest, Dwayne Allen of the Oak Ridge Boys.
Great
Dwayne.
To be here. Great to be here, Dean. And I didn't go to the Rotary Club meeting last week in my little hometown, but you were there last week, and I heard about it, and you did a great speech from what I hear. So let me welcome you back to Hendersonville anytime you want to come. It's a long way, by the way, from Hendersonville down here to Franklin.
I appreciate you making that journey, Dwayne.
A really nice drive today, so it's great to be with you today.
Well, when you say a small town in Hendersonville, it's not so small.
Well, it was when I came with the Oak Ridge Boys almost 53 years ago now. It was less than 500, and I would say we're probably knocking close to 80,000 now.
Wow.
And in fact, 1,000 of those are building within two blocks of my house where I live. Every morning I can go out and I have about that much dust on my car from all the building
all
that's going
by,
on.
Yeah.
But it's an exciting time to live in Hendersonville. In fact, all of the Nashville and surrounding little towns, when we get away, we call Nashville our home.
Yeah.
But it's really a suburb in Hendersonville around Old Hickory Lake. Mm-hmm. And the Oak Ridge Boys have been there for probably 60, 65 years, I guess.
Wow.
I've been here 53.
And Dwayne, small town seems to be a theme because you grew up in a small town in Texas.
I grew up in a town, Taylortown, Texas, so small that the entry and exit sign are on the same pole.
Save money that way.
That's right. But they named us. They named a road after me that runs in front of my house where I was raised, and they named a bridge that goes across a little creek that runs through my father's farm, where I learned how to fish and swim and skinny dip and all the things you do as a farm boy. They named the bridge and a road after me right there in a little place called Taylortown, Texas, and it's really small. But I learned a lot there. Growing up, I learned about the important things.
I'll tell you, it's starting to make more sense, Dwayne, because I get to know you better and know your values and principles and who you are and what stands for. I think it always starts back with family and where you grew up.
Well, my father was a very spiritual man. Mm-hmm. He didn't push it on anybody, but he felt his greatest blessing was to be able to make a living out of the dirt of the ground and raise a family, teach them about God, teach them to sing, teach them to be kind and to love their neighbor, help their neighbor out. When somebody's barn burned down, there would be a barn raising.
Right.
And I was raised in that kind of community. Mm-hmm. And we had one black family in our whole community, and I was raised in a segregated era of time. That's how old I am. But we never had Christmas at my house, but what we would save up all year long, a number three wash tub full of apples and oranges and nuts and some gifts for the kids. We would go to St. John Rector's house and we would share Christmas with them before we had our own. Mom and Dad would somehow save a little money all year long to buy toys. There were 12 kids in that family. Yeah. They had to ride on an old rickety school bus 30 miles away. But I played with them. They were my friends. But Daddy never let us have our own Christmas until we shared Christmas with them. And I once asked him, why can't they go to my school? And he said, well, son, maybe that'll change someday. Yeah. But you've got to love everybody. God created everybody.
Oh, yeah.
And man made us unequal, but God created us equal. And you've got to love your neighbor as yourself. So to do that, we share from the goodness of our garden that we grew all the food. Mama would go to her pantry and just unload mason jars full of canned goods. Mm-hmm. And we filled up that whole number three wash tub full of good food and shared it with them. Years later, my wife and I were in Paris visiting our folks, and there was an old hamburger joint by the sale barn, and it was run by black people. Mm-hmm. And I told Nora Lee, I want to take you, give you the best hamburger you've ever tasted in your life. So we went in there, and I recognized a few people. They recognized me, and we laughed and talked and caught up. And as I was leaving, we were about to pull out of the parking lot. She said, there comes a really big, tall man right toward our car. And she was a little frightened. And I said, don't worry, I know who that is. That's St. John Rector Jr. Mm-hmm. And he came, we're about 6'6". Wow. And I rolled down my window, shook hands, and we talked for a bit. And he said, I'd like to tell you something. All my brothers and sisters are now either doctors, lawyers, or school teachers. And we owe your father for that.
Wow.
Because he let us know that we were loved, we could be something. He shared his good fortune with us, even though we were very poor people. Mm-hmm. But he gave us food to eat. He gave us encouragement. And your father is the reason that all of us have become something in life. And I just want you to know that. My wife heard that. She had never even heard the story, you know.
Wow.
So those things, you know, that's how I was raised. I was raised by a father who loved God, but he showed it by farming the land. Mm-hmm. And everything he did was, in his way of thinking, a religious experience.
And Dwayne, I think it's one thing to say you believe in diversity. It's one thing to say that you know, embrace it. But when you actually live it and practice it out, it sounds like he had a lot of great words to share, but more importantly was his actions.
Yeah, my father made the example. I mean, he never got a paycheck. Mm-hmm. If the crops made good, we had enough money to put back to buy all the goods we would need to make another crop. If it went down, if we had bad weather and the crops didn't reach the goal, he would go borrow the money to make a new crop, pay that money back, get the money for a new crop. And that's the way we lived. And we raised cotton, we raised corn, all kind of row crops. We baled hay, had cattle, horses, goats, chickens, pigs.
Wow.
Everything that you can imagine on a family farm and ranch, we had it. And we all worked hard. And in fact, growing up, I didn't get to go to school when other kids went. I usually had to stay out another 2 or 3 weeks to pick cotton.
Yeah.
Because we had to get the harvest in, and I would have to come back to school and catch up on all of my schoolwork that I'd gotten behind on. So I would go for registration the first day, but then I didn't go back to school for 2 or 3 weeks usually. We were out in the cotton fields harvesting our crops.
Truly a family farm.
Yes.
So how many brothers and sisters did you
have? I had six. There's six of us. When we all came home at Christmas or Easter, I was the youngest.
Okay.
I always looked forward to family coming home because that's when we could all get together and sing. We all sang, everybody in the family. Mom and Daddy taught us to sing and read music. And when we all got together at Christmas or Easter, that's when they'd all come home. We had enough in our family for a double quartet. We did a lot of singing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I learned how to sing harmony there.
Mm-hmm.
But I learned something else with the Oak Ridge Boys.
Yeah.
It's nice to sing in harmony, but it's even nicer to live in harmony.
Oh, yeah. And speaking of harmony, because you've been with the Oak Ridge Boys, Dwayne, since 1966.
Right. In April, that'll be 53 years.
So longer than you and your bride.
That's right.
Have been married. So
I met her.
Uh-huh.
I met her singing. She was singing too.
Okay.
She sings on the Grand Ole Opry, and she's a backup singer. And my first date with her was a backup group doing background vocals for albums out of New York. And we went and did Oohs and Ahs together and did a background singing together. She and her sisters sang when she was young, and they were young. And in fact, they won the national championship for Group of the Year at the National Quartet Convention one year. And so they were raised up much like I was, but then she was raised in Bowling Green, Kentucky.
Okay. So how did you keep that harmony? Because so oftentimes your groups come together, they split up, and you know, what's been the key to that harmony for 53 years?
Well, Dean, it's like it's like a wife. It's like a marriage.
But you've got three of them.
Well, that's four times the problem, you know. And I think probably in me personally, I've always been a driven man, and I always come to the table with all the answers. In the early years, I think probably I may have forced a lot of my ideas into the group, but I've learned later on that it's better to open up for discussion and still have all the answers, but let everybody else put their ideas in. And we have a true democracy in our group. We vote, and but if I had to make a decision on something, I would have full support of everybody that I need, and I don't even have to call them. I know that. But if they had to do that and I wasn't there, or some of the other guys were not there, they would get the same kind of support. That's a kind of a partnership and a corporation and a group that we have. Everybody has got input. Everybody's important. We all are as different as night and day. But when you come to the table, everybody contributes to the one. And we can be bigger and last longer than any one, because we've got four people contributing to it. And we've got four different ways we can appeal to fans that a one does not have. So, and that doesn't even count if you put it all together and you make another one, and that's the group. So there's probably five different ways, because there are people who just love group singing. But there are individuals that love individual members of our group and may not care for me or someone else as much. And that's okay, because I win no matter what, because we're a true group. We believe in the one of the Oak Ridge Boys.
Like you said, I love the marriage analogy, because when you put the sanctity of marriage and you together being more important than yourself, I think that's the key to success.
I think one of the things I learned in my own marriage was in a little book I read, about 90 pages, and it uses the words, you can make a definite statement about something. This is the way it's going to be. But you don't leave any room for anybody else to talk when you do that. And I learned that in my marriage and in my group, that if I preface every major statement that I make with words like, I feel like, it's my feeling that, I've got an idea, but I'm open to yours. If you would have that attitude and mean it in your heart, you can get more out of everybody else, because you leave an opening for them to come in and say what their feeling is, what their idea is. And then you start growing. You're not tearing each other apart, because of where, when you buy a new house, if it's already built and the windows are already there, you accept that when you buy the house. But if you build on, and you got a choice of you're going to put it on this wall or that wall, you better ask questions and say, it's my feeling that it would be better here.
What do you feel?
How do you feel? Because when you've used the word feeling, you're saying, I accept your feelings too. You're open to tell me that those feelings. I'll accept that. And if you start building onto your house, you better have your feeling word working.
So, Dwayne, you're a world-renowned singer and a marriage counselor.
Well, I've been married for 49 years to the same beautiful woman. She gets prettier every day I see her.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
So what are plans for number 50? It's coming up soon.
You know, it will probably be a nondescript day. That's the way we are. Mm-hmm. The way I work and the way she works, mm-hmm. we've never been really able to celebrate on any anniversary. On some we have, yeah. or birthdays or things like that. I try to always get to main events with my children and to their main events, like graduation and things like that. Marriages, of course. We mark those in the book and we attend those. However, my birthday, I'm going to be working. So my birthday will be celebrated either before or after. Mm-hmm. And it's just understood. Yeah. It's not a big thing. So the 50th anniversary to me, I'm trying to plan something very special as a gift to her, but it might not even be on our anniversary at all. I may mm-hmm. be booked in Jap Africa, you know. I might not even be anywhere close, mm-hmm. and that's okay, yeah. because we know it's our anniversary, okay. even though we might not even be together.
I joke that Mother's Day mm-hmm. is every day
that's
for
right.
my wife.
That's right. And she's treated like that. Mm-hmm. I respect her for having input and for having her ideas, and I support her ideas as she supports mine. And we do fine. She manages the house, mm-hmm. and I manage the business, mm-hmm. and my ears are open to her input, and she's got great ideas, by the way. Mm-hmm. And a lot of album covers you see of the Oak Ridge Boys came out of her mouth. And that's good, because I ask her if she's got some ideas. Well, she usually comes up with them. And I was going through the house one day, and she was trying at the piano writing a song. And I said, you know, we haven't had any great songs about America recently. Lee Greenwood had a great one, mm-hmm. and Alan Jackson had a good one, a great one, actually. But I'd like to say something about the homeland. You know, and so I came back, and she had written a song called This Is America, which we mm-hmm. recorded. And she put the, I told her Charlton Heston line of, you'll take this over my dead body. We won't give up. We won't give in, you know, and that's in the chorus. So by the time I got home, she had a song written about that. So we have a very good relationship musically, and we've got two wonderful kids, four grandkids, and they're all in the music business. That's
wonderful.
How we make a living.
And Dwayne, just getting to know you better, sounds like you prescribe to that servant leader philosophy, and one thing I didn't realize, that you also serve as the president and CEO of the Oak Ridge Boys. Did you draw the short straw, or how did that come to be?
Well, mm-hmm. I guess for what I do, I work on the Oak Ridge Boys, mm-hmm. making sure that we're in the black. Mm-hmm. And you do that by entering in all of the details into a computer, mm-hmm. and having the computer set up on business models.
Right.
And my business models are 1, 2, 3. I don't have a 4. My business models are the harmony notes, mm-hmm. 1, 3, and 5.
Yeah.
And even Richard, when he sings bass, is doubling one of those notes.
Got it.
So we have 4 in our group, but all of my business models are set up on 3.
Okay.
And they basically are things that started from my faith of the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. And I mm-hmm. figured if it's good enough for God to make a three...
magical.
A triad... Mm-hmm. That's good enough for me. So in the beginning, my first 3 that I worked out was survival. How do we survive? And I noticed that everybody was happy when we put new songs into our show.
Yeah.
We didn't have hits yet. Mm-hmm. We had not had a gospel hit. We were a gospel group then. Mm-hmm. This is back 50 years ago,
right.
Or more. And I realized the people feed off of us. And if we are happy about what we're doing, they connect with that. They want to be happy too. They paid money to see us happy because they want to be happy uh-huh. too. You know, they didn't come to our show to be sad. They came to be uplifted. So it's our job to take that on as the ultimate goal. And so I thought the best thing for us to do is make a rule that every 2 or 3 months we have 2 or 3 new songs in our show.
Wow.
It builds our energy. They feed off of our energy. Then I realized to keep a good band together with all of us and all of our side people, give them a cost of living increase every year or ever so often to make them feel like when they go home, honey, we got a raise, you know. Yeah. This is good place for us, you know. Mm-hmm. You keep everybody financially happy. Then I noticed that the time that we had our biggest arguments, the boys, was when we would come off stage when we were hot, you know. Yeah. You know, we'd have our arguments, you know. Wife's the same way, right? In your family marriage. Mm-hmm. Think about it like that. So I made a rule that in our bus, we had an air conditioner that would freeze you to death. And the bus started before our show ended. Mm-hmm. Our driver would have the bus started and the air conditioning going. It'd be freezing inside. And everybody go to the bus to change down off of your sweat-infused clothes into your comfortable clothes. And I'm also made a rule that for 30 minutes, we don't talk about anything about the show.
Just decompress.
So everybody decompressed, and I noticed that all of our arguments just went away.
Wow.
We just sat down in our chairs on the bus and got something cold to drink. 30 minutes later, there wasn't a problem. So our problems went away by just approaching it in a common sense way. Where do we have our most arguments? It's when you're hot. And your high energy is up to a high level. You're getting each other's face. Let's don't do that. Let's just hold off until we cool off. Because when you get real hot, you're going to have to cool off anyhow. Mm-hmm. Sometimes. Do that first. Cool off first.
Yeah.
And then you don't have to go the other steps of 1, 2, 3. Because that's a business model, mm-hmm. too. You got to recognize what you did. You got to figure out how to undo it, and 3 is to bring it home. You're back to where you started. You wasted all that time if you're mad, okay? All this time spent making bad decisions is time wasted.
It's Dwayne, something I even think about. Oftentimes the heated environment is literally, you know, a result of your environment.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating. So it was interesting as we were working to schedule, you know, date to have you appear on our podcast. I think a lot of people envision, wow, what a glamorous lifestyle Dwayne lives on the road. He's traveling all around the world. And I didn't realize until you and I get to know each other better, it's a lot of work. So tell me more. Give us a glimpse into what it's like when you're on the road for 30 plus days.
Well, what I do, I work all the time. Doing something like this with you, is doing something good for our country. And I don't count that as work, although it is. It's a pleasure to do that because I believe in what you're doing.
Thank you.
So if I do charity work or any type of work like what both you and I are trying our best to direct people in the direction of buying American-made products that are produced here by families that help produce jobs for people, good-paying jobs for people who, in the past, their job has gone overseas.
Right.
And I go by these small towns that once had a mill in them, and mill towns, and I see empty houses, and I see farm places that are boarded up. It breaks my heart because at one time those little towns were booming.
Oh, yeah.
And what we've got to do is we've got to ask people to look for the label inside of everything they buy and make sure it says made in the USA or made in America. Because what you're doing is you're helping families have good jobs, good paying jobs, and not sending it overseas. It may cost a little more, but it's better, and it helps more people. Those are the side things I do. This is a side thing for me, but my whole life speaks that same story. because that's what I do. We are America's group. We go out and we're the ones that sing the national anthem at the football game, the baseball right. park, the festivals. We work your county fairs. We work the state fairs. We work in the Performing Arts Center. We're America's group. We're people that come to see us. They have all different kind of political leanings. We never take our politics to stage. I have political feelings, but my feelings are basically based around informing people. Mm-hmm. So I work all day on the Oak Ridge Boys, and I use social media mm-hmm. as levity to get away from how many more dates do we need in our Christmas tour for 2020 and right. where 2020 and where are they going to be? Right now, we're only 25 dates from being fully booked for 2020. Right now.
Wow. Not 2019.
No, we're fully booked for this.
Wow.
Yeah. We only need 25 more dates for next year, and we'll be fully booked.
So better hurry up fast if you want to book America's Band.
Yeah. And what I do is I work with our manager and vice president in our office, John Muir, and he works with William Morris Endeavor, who books our dates. We all work in conjunction with our career manager, Jim Halsey, who lives in Tulsa. And we design where we want to go. Mm-hmm. Okay, this year we're going to go to this fair or this performing arts center or this festival, or we're going to go to Canada and work their big jamboree up there that they have in this part of the country. Okay, we pick out our foundation dates for each week. Mm-hmm. And we book in at least two foundation dates. Those would be bigger money. And then we give that to the agency, who then fills in the blanks and puts a day to get us there and a day to get us back. And those are routing dates. Mm-hmm. So basically all of our foundation dates are already in the book for next year, and most all of our Christmas dates are booked. There's only a few that remain to be booked, but they're easy to book. They're just routing dates, and you've got to put them 500 miles in front of, around, or close to mm-hmm. the next date or behind the previous date. It's pretty simple when you just look at it as a common sense thing. But we work so much, we have to protect the people where we work and give them a 3-month protection clause so that we don't book something around them.
Right.
So working 150 dates a year is what it takes to keep all of my employees happy and get them a good Christmas bonus. We buy insurance for every member of our organization, their spouse, and all their kids. And with the past president who put in a Affordable Care Act, my increase on my premiums ran up about 49%.
Ouch.
And we kept it anyhow. Mm-hmm. We keep our people insured, and thankfully that is changing, and we got getting some breaks since that time. Mm-hmm. And our business did good during all administrations. I've run a small corporation under every president, and we've sang for every one of them except one since Jimmy Carter.
Wow.
And I can show you where the best profits are made, under whose presidency it came. And it's all in writing in the uh-huh. computer. It doesn't have right. a personality to it. It has figures on it. I look at those figures.
It's the business side.
And I design 150 dates that we work every year. And we don't have to work 150. That's always the goal. It might be 148 like last year, or it might be 151 like the year before, or 150 the previous year, or 150 the previous year. But it will be somewhere around 150 dates. Those are paid dates. Then, in addition to that, I've always believed that you judge someone's career and success by how they pass it along. So we do charity work, which we don't get paid for. Mm-hmm. But that is above and beyond the 150. And we give back and we pass it along. For example, 3 years ago, we made a television show as a result of, I was looking around and I saw that 22 people, veterans, die every day from PTSD.
Right.
They take their life by suicide. That just burned into my mind and I couldn't get it off my mind. 22 people commit suicide every day. What are we going to do about this? So I asked our PR guy to find an organization that specializes in helping veterans with PTSD. And he came up with the American Legion. Mm-hmm. Great organization, okay. All veterans. And I thought, well, there's not a better organization we could be associated with. So we contacted them. We would like to become a spokesperson and help you bring awareness to the fact that there are this many people committing suicide. We want to do something about it. So we signed up with the American Legion, and we did a television show. And we had veterans on the show, one who had planned to commit suicide, and our work helped save his life. Quentin was on the show with his wife and son. That show showed for 2 years and won a Telly Award for us, which is a television equal to a Grammy.
Yeah.
And we had several people whose lives were saved watching that show and pointing them to a place where they can get help. I believe you need to pass along your success. Mm-hmm. And when we do things for charity, it's always with that in mind. What are the intended or what are the expected results? What are we going for? My results was I was horrified by 22 people committing suicide a day, and I wanted to do something about it. What do we do? Well, we've been able to do something about it. The number is still too high. But it looks like it's beginning to come down a little bit. And I'm thankful to God for that.
Well, Dwayne, I'm noticing a trend. And I love that trend because you talked about the success of your marriage.
Mm-hmm.
It's more about focusing on your wife. The success of the Oak Ridge Boys, realizing that it's four of you.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'm learning now it's not really the Oak Ridge Boys, it's the Oak Ridge family.
Right.
I mean, the way you guys look out for each other. And I think as you continue to look over your career, it's been so much of a focus on others, and I'd love to hear the story about the American Legion because, you know, Authentically American, we're a brand that we tell everybody honors our American heroes. You know, 10% of our gross profits go to veteran and first responders charities, and at another time, I need to introduce you to Reboot Alliance because they've got an amazing faith-based PTSD program not far from you in Clarksville.
I've already worked with them.
Fantastic.
Yes, and the boot people, the boot girls that have the boots that are combat boots.
Right.
We've already worked with them, took our picture with them. It was all over the trades. Mm-hmm. We've already done that. And there are many people out there that form charities so they can just hide money. I run from those.
Mm-hmm.
But the ones that really do good work and get good results are, I'm a results-oriented thinker. I look for the results. It's not what you say, it's what you do and what happens from what you do. 1, 2, 3, the business model. It's just the way I think. And if it's a results-oriented project, then I could be interested in it, you know, mm-hmm. because you're spinning your wheels and I don't have that much time, you know.
It's back to making a difference.
Yeah, you make a difference. I did have a Make a Difference bracelet mm-hmm. that I was wearing, but I gave it to a lady in the audience the other night, so I got to get me another one. We worked Paris, Texas, my hometown, twice over the last 3 years. And a church up there decided that their whole year program was going to be based on a song we had, Did I Make a Difference? And so they're their promotion is make a difference in the community, you know, help other people.
Wonderful.
Well, what we did is we got the sponsors of our show to pay for all of the expenses of the show before we went. And we gave all the money for all the ticket sales to the Boys and Girls Club.
Yeah.
And we built now a new room for the girls. We put new air conditioners on the whole Boys and Girls Club. We painted the whole building. We've given them over $100,000. And we left that in Paris, Texas, my hometown, mm-hmm. where I used to go and play basketball. And that's a good feeling to be able to do that for your hometown area.
Absolutely. I'm curious this way, because you and the Oak Ridge Boys have been together 53 years, traveled around the world, you know, performed for multiple presidents, performed packed stadiums. Is there one event, one venue that just sticks out and say, you know what, this was what it was all about?
Oh, yeah. What was St. Louis, Missouri.
Tell me.
We were doing the Children's Miracle Network. We did all of the first ones of those with Maria Osmond. Mm-hmm. And we were working at the Fox Theater there. Mm-hmm. Well, they wanted to send a crew to tape us on stage and then take us to the Children's Hospital there in St. Louis. And the greatest audience I've ever had in my life is one person.
Wow.
And they took us through several different wards of the hospital and different levels of severity in the patients that were there. Mm-hmm. And we got to this one room, and they told us out in the hall, the young man in there is a teenager, but he can't move any muscle or body part in his whole body except his eyelids. That's all. And if he likes what you're doing, he will blink his eyes.
Wow.
That's how we communicate with him. Well, we went in there, and he started blinking his eyes really fast. And we talked to him just a bit. He could hear every word you say, understand it, but he cannot respond except with his eyelashes. And we were asked to sing Elvira for him. And when we started singing that song, which he already knew, he loved it, his eyelids blinked so fast that it broke my heart. And after the first chorus, while Joe was singing a verse, I had to duck under the camera and go outside and cry, and then get myself back together in time to get back in and sing the last chorus. But that's probably, his eyes were blinking so fast, it was like a hummingbird. And it was a real blessing. It broke my heart, but it blessed my heart too, that we could touch him, and he would be so touched that's the only way he can react. And even as I went outside to cry, dry my eyes, because they were taping it for the Children's Miracle Network, I didn't want to be on there crying. I didn't want them to see me cry, or him. So I just ducked out under the camera, and somebody else in the group started humming along with Joe while he was singing the verse, which he does by himself anyhow. And I got back in time to sing the last chorus. That's the best concert I believe I've ever had.
Well, Dwayne, it's a good thing this is an audio podcast.
Are you all right?
Because you can see the tears rolling down my cheek.
You're just, okay.
You know, seeing you there, and it's an audience of one.
Yeah.
It's just interesting the parallels, because our kids have gone to Christ Presbyterian Academy.
Right.
And just this last season, my daughter's team, soccer team,
right,
you know, they wanted to win the state championship, but they talked about an audience of one. You know, different context with playing for God our Father. But, I mean, it just brings a whole new context to think of, you know, packed stadiums, presidents you've played around, that, you know, that's the one that sticks out most.
I have philosophies for everything, I guess. I guess probably my people might even get tired of hearing my philosophies over and over, but I've tried to pick the ones that work. And I believe that God gave us all gifts, and that's why I'm here. Mm-hmm. He gave me the gift of singing. He gave me the gift of knowledge. He gave me a gift of discernment. And I can see a crook a mile off. And that's a gift of discernment.
Yeah.
I don't use that in a bad way, but it sure has kept me out of a lot of problems. But I also believe that God gave the Oak Ridge Boys a light. And it's up to us to shine that light in the right way. In my way of thinking, the light is Jesus Christ. But I feel like that it's our responsibility to shine our light the right way. And I have a good example. We were working in Jamboree in the Hills. Over 65,000 people were there. It was very hot, just steaming hot. It had rained the night before, and the ground was just like a, it was like a stove almost. It was steaming. And there was a country act on right before. I won't mention his name. Mm-hmm. But he came off stage, and he said, "Boy, it's hot out there, man. Them people are dead, man. You ought to just get out there and do your songs and get off and find someplace cool, you know?" Well, wait a minute. We're here to entertain them. We're not here to complain about the heat. They're in the hot sun looking at us.
Yeah.
So the way we approached it, I called the guys in a huddle, like a football huddle.
Mm-hmm.
And when we went on stage, Joe jumped a whole set of monitors that were on the side of the stage. We all slid into the microphones. The people went crazy. We didn't have to sing a song. They were turned on by how much energy we were going to give them. Before a note was ever played, we got a standing ovation. The difference in his attitude and our attitude was before the song ever started, they picked up on it. And here's the way I look at the audience. I feel in that situation, he gave us a light, but he gave them a reflector.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a ticket in their hand that they paid for.
Yeah.
To show that reflector. And if we shine our light right, we'll feel it back, because they're going to reflect it back. That's what you call communication.
Sounds like it was blinding.
Yeah.
That reflection
and
back.
And we got that light back from their reflection before we ever sang a song. And then we stayed out there and just demolished the crowd. And to me, all of the energy originates from us.
Mm-hmm.
If you're shining the light, you better make sure that light is shining very brightly, because people paid for a ticket to forget the problems they go through all day long and the rest of the week. They came there to get away from that. They don't want to hear it's hot. They know it's hot. They want to be entertained. They want to be taken away from someplace hot. Take them away with your spirit, with your love, and your entertainment, your energy. Take them to a place that they were not.
Mm-hmm.
And let them have another way to look at where they are today. And you do that by giving them what you've got inside. And if it's pure, they'll pick up on it.
Pick up on it. They did, it sounds like.
Yeah, and they will pick up on it.
One last question, because America, you know, important to our company, important to our brand, but it sounds like it's been important to you and the Oak Ridge Boys. And I think back to 1983, you had a song that did pretty well.
Right. American Made.
So you tell me about that story. What's the backstory behind American Made?
Well, it was one of our number one hits.
Yes.
But I've got another story.
Tell me.
That I want to relate to you. In 1976,
mm-hmm.
we were selected by the Cultural Exchange Program of the United States government to represent the United States in a cultural exchange program with the Soviet Union.
Wow.
They were still firmly behind the Iron Wall.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? And we had not had our tear down the wall experience mm-hmm. yet. This was 76 in our bicentennial year, okay? And the birthday of our country. And that's how it was all sold. Roy Clark, the Oak Ridge Boys, went to the Soviet Union, and we were there for 3 weeks. We did three major cities. And in one of those cities where the Reykjavik concentration camp was in the Baltic area, in Riga. We finished our show. We didn't know, we had not hit in the country music audience yet. We were singing songs like Daddy Sang Bass and a few songs like that that had crossover for other people. But we were a gospel group, basically, at that point. We had to learn some new songs to sing there just to call ourselves a country group, you know. And so there was a trio that was back in Roy that were opening the show, and they wanted to let them just do backup and us do another song. So they called me back into the back room with all of these KGB people. And we had had to clear every song that we had done prior to the show, 3 months prior. Every word that would be spoken, every lyric in every song had to be typed and approved. Well, we're adding a song. Well, they call me back and they want to know, what is this song you want to add? Well, it can go by two different names. One, the official name is Where the Soul of Man Never Dies. You probably sung it in church. And there's another line that's used as a recognizable title, Canaan Land, because that's the first two lines, to Canaan Land, I'm on my way where the soul of man never dies. Well, I decided if we put Canaan Land, it won't be talking about a man's soul. Maybe they'll approve it. So we went back there. I went back there, and all these stiff KGB people were in there. They said, "What is Canaan Land? It's not in our dictionary." And I said, "It's a good place that we think about, that we go when we die. And it's a very positive thing." He said, "But it's not in our dictionary. We approve Disneyland."
Yeah.
Disneyland. "To Disneyland, I'm on my way where the soul never dies." I mean, that's what we had to put up with.
Oh,
well, I asked them if they would. I was prepared. I asked them, could I give them another suggestion? And I said, "I don't think Disneyland fits, because that's a playground. And he said, "Well, what is your idea?" And I said, "To that fair land, I'm on my way. Can we do that?" They approved that. So we did that song over there, and that's how we got it approved.
Wow.
We were also doing Have a Little Talk with Jesus with Roy. And but it had been approved. They'd seen us do that in Las Vegas with Roy. I mean, we went through a lot of diplomatic stuff months in advance. Well, we sang that night. And when we finished the show, we were all in the military-type buses. If you remember the military buses, old school buses, they open from the top and they come down.
Oh, yeah.
Well, there was a woman beating on the window where I was sitting. And she had a note. And she was trying to get my attention, so I lowered the window where I was sitting, and she flipped a note into the bus. It fell down at my feet. I didn't go down for the note in the floor immediately, because I looked back, and as the bus was pulling off, she was being beaten down and dragged off by Russian soldiers.
Oh, my.
For even interacting with us. And I don't know what happened to her. I never saw her again. But we got down the road, and somebody said, "What did that note say?" Well, I reached down and got it. It said, "Thank you for singing about Jesus. There are those of us over here who believe."
Wow.
And when we got home, we landed at Washington, D.C. I knelt down and kissed the airport landing and kissed the ground, because I have seen what it is like behind the Iron Curtain. We never want to go there. They're not even there now. Thank God for that.
It's a great country we live in, Dwayne.
But when I got back to America and my feet were on solid ground, the first thing I did was kiss the ground, the airport runway, really. I didn't wait till I got inside. I got right off the plane. I wasn't by myself either. There was a whole bunch of guys there kissing the ground because we had just seen what it's like to live in that climate, in that type of political world. And people, we don't ever need to go there. We need to cherish the freedoms we have in America, make them better, tune them up a little bit, tweak them a little bit when they get sideways. But as far as changing the whole system, no. We need to just correct some of the things as we go along. We have growing pains, and we need to realize that they're just growing pains. They can be corrected. In your business model, if you look at it like that, to get to the ultimate of three, you don't have to go all the way back and crash and go to one by starting all over again with something new. Go back to two and tweak it a little bit, and you'll be back on your way to bringing it home.
Well, Dwayne, what I'm finding out, we could literally sit here all day and share some amazing stories, but I want to be respectful of your time. But I do have a gift.
Hearing
you about, I think it was 31 of 34 days you were on the road, and how you had 31 pairs of socks. So I know you always wear the gold-toed socks, but being a great American who's making a difference, I had some authentically American socks.
Oh, I love them. Cool.
If you're feeling really, truly American and patriotic, so these are red and white stripes and blue stars. So that's one pair. And then if you want to be a little more traditional and conservative but equally patriotic, this is the black and gray version. So these
I love them both. And the biggest challenge I will have is keeping my grandsons out of my socks drawers because they come and raid me. They love this. And I do too. I think it's great. I love your patriotism. That gets right to my heart.
Well, Dwayne, I'll tell you what, if the grandson takes them, I know a guy that could get another pair.
Okay. That sounds good to me.
Well, Dwayne, it truly was a pleasure. Thank you for investing the time and sharing the stories. You truly are a great American who's making a difference.
Thank you very much. I appreciate what you're doing, too.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Authentically American podcast. You can follow Authentically American on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, and find all our episodes at authenticallyamerican.us/podcast. If you haven't yet, go to Apple Podcasts to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Thank you for listening.